the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen.
I can remember as a kid singing that 12 Days of Christmas song at the prep school that my brother and I went to, and we weren't a particularly churched family. And I remember in music class singing that song and kind of looking around the room like, wait, what? 12 Christmases? Like all in the row? We don't get that at our house. And just sort of assessing if my friends experienced 12 of what we experienced on December 25th. And then the more immersed I became into church, I began to see like, oh, okay, I get it. Christmas is a season. It's something that is spread out over the course of 12 days before we celebrate the Feast of the Epiphany. And then looking what the lectionary, this source that gives us our readings week in and week out, looking at how the lectionary during the Christmas season makes this attempt to both deepen and widen the Christmas story. So we have this reading this morning from the prologue to John, which is mystical and spiritual and wide. And next week we get the sort of second act of the Christmas story from Christmas 2. But I think because we have heard the Christmas story so many times, and maybe because most of us began hearing that story as children, the Christmas story seems simple. It seems that way. Maybe you're like me. When you think of the Christmas story, you think of the pageant, a Christmas play where our older kids fill the roles of Mary and Joseph and narrator, and our younger kids are little lambs, sheep, and angels. Maybe there is a baby that is born a month or two before Christmas, and he or she plays the role of Jesus. And if there's no baby born to the congregation that year, then it's a doll. Acted out on Christmas Eve, year in and year out, shepherds and a star and wise men and women and a baby and a barn and a few missed lines and some adorably sung Christmas hymns lure us into the idea that this Christmas story is simple, that it's a children's story, and yet it is not. When we step back from this story and we read it with fresh eyes and open minds and hearts, we can see that, as I said on Christmas Eve, hope is born among troubling circumstance. And as we continue to read along in the story, as we do on the first Sunday after Christmas and the second Sunday after Christmas, we learned very quickly that the birth of the Christ child doesn't usher in a new era of bluebird powder days. If we metaphorically skied through this Christmas story past the visit of the three wise people, it's storm skiing, no viz, all the way. You like what I did there? I took the Judeo-Christian narrative and the culture of Jackson, Wyoming, and put them together. Amazing. I'm even amazing myself this morning. You know, this is what 20 years in the pulpit gives you. As the story goes, the babe Jesus and his parents are visited by royalty, and they are presented with some pretty loaded gifts. Gold, a symbol of wealth and royalty. Frankincense, a symbol of deity or the divine. Incense burned at the altars where sacrifices are made to God. And myrrh, a foreshadowing of the suffering and death of Jesus, a spice used for embalming. Following the departure of the wise ones, the story tells us that Joseph has a dream where he is warned to get up, to take his wife and his child and flee to Egypt. If circumstances weren't chaotic and troubling enough, now the Holy Family is forced to emigrate to a foreign country. It would be a big deal to gather up all your energy and fly commercial a few days following childbirth. But this, of course, is not how Mary and Joseph are forced to venture down to Egypt. The story gets even more harrowing. It tells us that Herod then has all the children, two and under, put to the sword. And the learned Christian here is supposed to hear the echo of the Passover story. We're supposed to connect this story with the story of Moses hidden in that floating basket and Israel ultimately fleeing Pharaoh. The story is loaded and complex and dangerous. The story is a far cry from an 8-year-old Mary dressed in blue, a star suspended by a fishing rod hung over a manger scene built by faithful, churchy parents. The complicating factors of the story tell us something significant for those of us who are trying to live out the faith in real time, no matter what era. As the story fades from Christmas Eve pageant to the season of Christmas and beyond, the faithful, no matter what era we are living in, the faithful are reminded that the birth of Emmanuel, God come among us, doesn't trigger an end to suffering and struggle and violence and tragedy. How many of us, as we've sought to align ourselves with the Christian faith, have thought in that dark moment? How many of us have had those moments of, come on, God? I mean, really? Like, I'm saying my prayers. I'm going to church. I'm trying to live well. And I can't seem to catch a break here. How many of us? I'm not exactly sure how many of us have had that moment, but I can tell you that at least one of us has, the one who's talking here. I don't know why we do, but I think sometimes we think that post-Jesus, there ought to be smooth sailing ahead. We ought to catch a string of breaks. It should be bluebird powder day after bluebird powder day. And I don't know why we think that, because in light of the story that we have at Christmas, if we're really paying attention to this Christmas story, I don't know where we would get that. If we're really paying attention to the Christmas story, we should get lumps in our throats and butterflies in our stomachs and sweaty palms rather than springs in our step. Sometimes I hear people say things like, well, if Christians were really being Christians in the world, we wouldn't have any poverty. We wouldn't have any turbulence, no social or political or economic strife, no disparity or suffering, no rancor. And quietly, I think to myself, I wish that's what the story promised, but it's not what the story promises. For the Christian, for the Jesus follower, the origins of peace are not political, The origins of peace are not social. The origins of peace are not economic. For the Christian, for the Jesus follower, the ones who are really paying attention to the story, the origins of peace look more like what the recovery community calls serenity. A centeredness, a wholeness, a sense of integration amidst chaos and troubling circumstance. Peace is something that happens on the inside of ourselves, in our hearts, in our souls, which of course is the point of the incarnation, so that we might see it for ourselves too. And reform, the reform that we are looking for, comes first from the inside, not from the outside. You see, reform of our political and social and economic institutions comes from our own internal transformation, not from external strategizing change. This kind of reform, the internal kind, is more enduring and authentic. Reform of those political and social and economic institutions then come as a byproduct of our own transformation, rather than a product in themselves. Our social and political and economic institutions are reformed because we are transformed. Our hearts and minds are changed, and then our lives and our relationships are transformed. And then the institutions that we populate, whether they're political or social or economic, are transformed because of our own internal transformation. I think Paul really hits the nail on the head in light of the Christmas story and the kind of transformation it offers in his letter to the Romans. And I'm going to read you a piece from the 12th chapter of Romans and see if you can grasp in your mind this different kind of transformation, this inside-out transformation that the Jesus follower is seeking to embody. He writes, "Don't be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." And the word that he gets used there is nous. It's like it's kind of a connection of a heart and mind. So it's not, you know, we don't want to think just with our enlightenment minds here. Like, think with our whole embodied minds, our mind and our heart. "Don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your whole integrated mind. Don't think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. We have different gifts. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy. If it is serving, then serve. If it's teaching, then teach. If it's to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully." He says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. cling to what is good, be devoted to one another in love, honor one another above yourselves, never be lacking in zeal, be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you, he says. Bless and don't curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Don't be conceited. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is loving in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, you see that? As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Don't take revenge. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Such a compelling vision of how we might live out our lives with the people around us. I said to you on Christmas Eve that we are not witnesses standing by. We are actors in a supporting role. Christmas brings to the church a beautiful and complex story. And it brings to the Christian, the Jesus follower, the one who is really seeking to embody the faith, to that one, it brings a mountain of work, a mountain of internal work. I believe when we devote ourselves to that work and we support and encourage one another in it, then will we see that progress in our culture, in our community that we so long desire to see. What better time than the new year to start this work again? Amen.